Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires. Now, let's start talking money.
What's up, y'all? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are in the 3 o'clock hour, and so it is time to talk money. On today's edition of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, I love it when I have data nerds on the show because I am one myself. And today is no exception. We're going to cap off this week by talking to an accomplished economist about the biggest economic issue on everybody's minds, inflation. Mike Matowitz is the principal economist for the Roosevelt Institute, a think tank that focuses on corporate and public power, labor and wages, as well as the economics of race and gender inequality. And importantly, this is how you know he's a real data nerd. He is on the Data Users Advisory Committee for the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. And if you don't happen to be an economist, the BLS is basically where we get all of our data from to run our little regression models and things. So Mike is the real genuine article, as they say. Welcome, Mike. Thanks for making time.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I love talking about this stuff. So let's start out with the basics. Inflation has been real bad for a few years. Where are we at now?
Like, we're in, I don't know if we're going to call it our happy place. We're in a much happier place.
Happier place. I like it.
Yeah. I'm going to do my best to be audio friendly and not try and draw charts and graphs with my hands. but, you know, we went through a couple of years of like where we thought we were going to have some inflation, probably more than we wanted. And then we got a lot more inflation than we wanted. And then there was, you know, another year in change of being deeply worried about exactly how much inflation we were having and what it was going to take to get it back down to normal levels. I am not going to brutalize the terminology of any of the aviators listening, but there were a lot of discussions about hard landings and soft landings and whether it was a landing at all. But I feel like we're, you know, like you can talk to really big nerds about this who are really, really concerned. And kind of everybody is like, yeah, we're sort of through the worst of that. And this did not come out as badly as people thought it would on the inflation side. And then, you know, when you look at the flip of this, if you go back to the last recession, we spent like almost a full decade getting back to, you know, close to the level of GDP growth, employment, rising wages that we should have been having without a recession. And in this case, we got there in like a year or two. We're still way above where we should have been. And, you know, I think if you're an economist, which thank God for most people, they are not, and you only care about like the forward-looking view of the world, it's like, yeah, this is the economy we sort of want to be going with, right? Like we have inflation back down and our future prospects for growth and making everything more affordable are a lot better. But that said, like, it wasn't easy getting here.
Yeah, definitely some pain points along the way. What I think is interesting about just the way media covers economics, right, is when inflation is rising, and inflation from a layperson's perspective, just to do some defining here, it's a measure of the rate at which things are becoming more expensive. And so when we look at that, you know, when we see inflation going up above a level that is usually the target, somewhere in that 2.5% range, the press covers it a lot. And there's a lot of hand wringing and pearl clutching and whatever other tortured metaphor we want to use. But the media doesn't seem to cover it in the same way simply because it doesn't have the fear factor in it when inflation is coming down. Here, there's been a lot of attention because of the presidential race and a lot of assertions from the more right-leaning outlets that everything is still terrible. And there's this gulf that we're trying to bridge between this actual reality state of our economy, which is frankly very good, and the fact that people are still feeling pain in making their paychecks stretch. How can it both be true that like our economy is now in a highly desirable place, we've got good macroeconomic indicators, and yet people still feel like their paychecks aren't able to make it work?
No, that's completely reasonable. And I think this is one of the big problems that we have in terms of the way economists think about inflation and the way that, you know, real people human experience people.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, fine. It's like, so if you're an economist and gas prices go up because, I don't know, a pipeline breaks or there's a random war in, say, Eastern Europe, hypothetically speaking, you know, these are things that happen. And for the economists, the idea is, well, we don't want policy to respond to these things because, like, there's nothing we're going to do with interest rates or deficits that's going to make peace in the Middle East. You know, it'd be awesome. But, you know, that's not how that works. And so, you know, the economist view is like, well, we should probably try and tune that whole thing out because, you know, that's going to crowd our decision making and make us make policy errors. And, you know, if you're a real human person, you're like, cool, I would love it if you guys didn't make policy errors, but also I still need to get to work. And, you know, I can't do that without putting gas in my car. And I think that's been, to some extent, like a big disconnect here is that, like, at least for the last year and change, economists have been like, yo, this is starting to look pretty good. Because, you know, we have seen, I think the big worry for economists was that we had big food price spikes and big gas price spikes. And those are things that, you know, really hit people hard. And if you're an economist, you're supposed to ignore it when it happens immediately, but you're supposed to care a lot about what it does to how people think about future inflation, right? So, okay, great. I'm sure that matters a ton when you're trying to get home from high school on a half tank of gas, as some of us have done. So I think we probably got a little too caught up in this to, you know, address the world that we were dealing with in real life. And ironically, the sort of flip of this is like, you know, when that was going on at the time, you had a lot of economists being like, well, this isn't that, but like, you know, from the core measures that we're worried about, which leave out all the stuff that people are really, really mad about.
That really buy. Food, gas.
Then, right. Then, you know, we're like, well, we're not too worried about this, right? And now we've had inflation come down a bunch. And, you know, partly it's the measures economists care about, and it's also the things that we're worried about setting off future inflation, right? Like, we have not had an economy where people have decided, oh yeah, we got to raise prices. It's like 5-10% every year to keep up with inflation. Like, that's just, that hasn't happened. And you could kind of see that from really nerdy data if you really wanted to. But I think the flip here is like, as prices have come down, the real thing that's been pushing prices down, especially for the last year, has been gas prices. And, you know, just as economists were kind of like not wanting to talk about it on the way up, we have been talking about it a lot on the way down. And, you know, we know from research that, you know, if it bleeds, it leads, I believe is the term in the news, right? So, like, there's been more research this time, now that we have like better robots to tell us how people are speaking, about like how much more news coverage responds to bad news about gas prices than good news about gas prices. So you kind of have that built-in factor. And then you also have the economists who are like, yeah, don't worry about it now. And also not trying to, like, you know, you can imagine that a year or two ago when gas prices were going up, there were economists who were like, yes, but we should also be worried about the big picture. And, you know, the same people are kind of like, well, let's not stress gas prices going down now. And maybe they were right on both counts, but in the sense that the news was not really buying the gas prices don't matter as much on the way up. There's no one sort of pushing media coverage to be like, wait, gas prices are down a ton.
Little segment we do with folks like my current guest, Mike Matowitz, who is the principal economist at the Roosevelt Institute. We're sort of the we do not follow any of the media rules. Like, no, let's talk about inflation. Let's talk about economics. The opposite of it bleeds, it leads. It's really interesting to me that, you know, when economists talk about things like inflation, there is often not, I would say, a real good, succinct explanation of the interrelated factors, right? And the inflationary spike that we saw that really hit its peak here in the U.S. in June of 21, right? This is like well over 3+ years ago, right? That was at its peak. We weren't very good at saying to people, look, there's the COVID supply chain shortage. You have geopolitical disruptions. You had shipping chance. And by that, I mean both Ukraine and then obviously currently we've got what's going on in the Middle East, which has these sort of, is it the dog wagging the tail or what's happening here? But it has these impacts. There's this whole sort of litany of causes. And it feels to me like we don't do a good job explaining those things, right? That when you see less regulation from a monopolistic or antitrust perspective, absent other factors, you're going to see prices rise more quickly because companies can engage in price fixing. That when you have inflationary periods, it also presents an opportunity for companies, after their input prices come down, the actual cost of goods sold, they can keep prices high because people have shown that they'll still consume goods at a certain level. So you have price gouging. We've not been good about talking about the things that actually have a very specific attribution, right? A responsibility. So when I think about inflation, there's a whole bunch of stuff we can't directly control, but there is a set of things that we can from a regulatory or monetary or fiscal policy perspective. Can we talk about a little bit, Mike, what are some of the things that we can do to limit future inflation?
Yeah, I mean, there are many things here. And I think, you know, I will totally raise my hand as an economist who's gotten a lot of this stuff wrong in the past. Like, I think, you know, one of the weird things that economists say is like, actually, gas prices, like, this is like a super competitive sector. And the idea here is like, look, if I'm running the Chevron across from the Exxon and we are across the street from each other, then like, that's pretty close to real competition, right? And like, on the one hand, that's true. Like, you really can just go make a U-turn and buy gas at the next pump if they're offering a better price than me. You know, kind of the thing that I think we've learned more about because we've had a lot of enforcement on, you know, prospective mergers this time is you've seen sectors that we think of as really competitive, like gas stations or grocery stores. You know, when you dig into the documents, you see things from their CEOs that's like, oh yeah, like we should definitely use this and push margins up. Or like literally, you know, the people running American oil companies texting with members of OPEC where it's OPEC. Like, well, we're not really part of your cartel, but what if we were a little bit?
Yeah. You know, how about this slightly higher price per barrel? We're talking about inflation right now with the principal economist for the Roosevelt Institute. His name is Mike Matowit. I'm Maggie, and my special guest this half hour is the principal economist for the Roosevelt Institute. His name is Mike Matowit. So happy to have you, Mike. So we were talking about the fact that when we think about the non-core, and we're using little buzzwords here, the non-core products
really
that we
are.
Buy, right, the most of, meaning food and gas, which are the things that the vast majority of Americans sort of, it's the lens through which we understand the economy is how much does it cost me to feed my family? You can maybe throw housing in there as well. But food, gas, housing, when that's expensive, we think things are not going well or too expensive relative to what our expectations are. And we've been talking about the fact that both in grocery and in oil and gas production, there has basically been increasingly monopolistic and behaviors, consolidation, some significant deregulation in the oil and gas industry. But all of this has led to an opportunity for there to be wink, wink, nudge, nudge price fixing or price setting, right? Like, oh, it's not actually price fixing, but it looks like it. It quacks and has feathers. As well as, frankly, price gouging. So we know that there lies some solutions in there. But I wanted to ask you this question, because this is the thing that I think a lot of people don't put together. What is the relationship between tax policy, when we talk about corporate tax rates and income tax rates, especially if we can just separate us all into the 95% of us who work for a living and earn a paycheck that is somewhere south of, say, like $400,000, $500,000 a year, and the ultra wealthy or the top 5%. What does tax policy have to do with inflation? How do these interact?
Yeah, I think this is actually another one too, where we have like a lot better data now than probably 20, 30 years ago when like the last time we had a serious debate about this happened. And, you know, I think especially this recovery, you know, one of the reasons you saw house prices go up so much was that people who had like cash to go buy a spare house just kind of did it. And, you know, that's great. I think everyone should have a beach house. That's the dream. Most of us have one house, and people adding a second makes it harder for most of us to buy one. And that's one of the reasons that rents have gone up. You could imagine that if you didn't have an extra $400,000 or $500,000 sitting around to pay cash for a beach house, that, you know, something like that could be a pretty big difference. And I think this is like, when you look at where the inflation happened, like, yes, there were the things that we've talked about where it's like, yeah, there was bird flu that pushed up egg prices. Yes, there were, you know, a series of supply chain disruptions that mattered a lot for the oil and gas industry that pushed up, you know, the cost of filling up a car. But like a lot of the housing type stuff, we had a big lack of building for a couple of years. And then we also just had like a lot of people with money to burn who really did buy like second houses. You know, you could imagine that it's not that onerous to set tax policy such that people don't, you know, throw off enough money from their high income, high paying jobs to like decide to just buy a spare house, right?
I call it over consuming relative to what other working people need to consume, right? Yes. There is that. Those are some of the comparisons we need to start to try to make, because I mean, when you're talking about price fixing, that we've also seen evidence that some of that is happening in the housing markets as well, right? As more and more private equity firms buy up large, like try to basically monopolize housing stock in various regions, they're able to set literally market rents that are above market, right? Because they are the price setter. Sorry to jump in.
I think housing is a great place to talk about this too, because again, we're talking about the there should be a formal term for the wink, wink, nudge, nudge, don't read my text price fixing, yeah. Right? So, you know, we've seen a lot of like algorithmic pricing now where it's like you have a bunch of landlords in one place sort of going to the same data vendor to be like, what should I set my interest rate or what should I set my rent increase at next year? And, you know, if they were just asking one or two people, that'd be one thing. They're all reporting to the same place, and we're all paying the costs that that thing reports out. So, you know, it has this nice way of saying like, I'm not the one who price fixed. I just paid the subscription fee that
allowed us all to price fix together.
Yeah, they just told me what I should charge
magically. Yeah. And we know, and for folks that may be listening, we know that this happened. You can check it out. You can use the Google Texas housing price fixing, just go check it out. You can find the articles on this. We've got about 2 minutes left, Mike. I wanted to ask you this. What should the Fed be doing right now in terms of inflation and employment? These are the two things that they try to balance with their interest rate policy. And secondly, to touch briefly on the importance of a central bank's independence.
Yeah, we really like an independent central bank. One of the things we liked a lot about it for the last recovery was that we were able to say, you know, let's not do a really long time with unemployment, or let's not wait for everyone in Congress to hold hands and figure out the perfect policy. Let's do the right thing. And then, you know, if we do too little or we do too much, the Fed can kind of clean it up for us because they're independent. I worry a lot about what's going to happen if we're not doing the right thing there. I think like we're probably going to see the Fed come off things a little bit more now that we are sort of on the backside of inflation, whether that looks like we're going to cut things a half point or a quarter point for the next few meetings, I'm not really sure, but interest rates are clearly on the way down just because inflation is on the way down.
Yes. Folks, that's Mike Matowitz, the principal economist at the Roosevelt Institute, a friend of mine and now a friend of all of you. Thanks so much for sharing some of your incredible knowledge with all of us. I love it. I hope you stay on the Data Users Advisory Committee for the BLS. We rely on that data. It is the source from which we gain our insights. Speaking of which, the Bureau of Labor Statistics needs to stay pretty independent as well, because the data matters. Garbage in, garbage out.
We love them.
That is the only way economists can do what they do. Folks, that's going to do it for today's episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. Thanks so much to Mike Matowitz.
Thanks for listening to Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of Civic Media and the Patriotic Millionaires. For more information, go to patrioticmillionaires.org. And be sure to tell your friends. The Patriotic Millionaires buy advertising across a number of Civic Media stations.